This is Harold Covington speaking on November the 8th, 2012, and this is a special podcast of Radio Free Northwest, in which I'm going to discuss the implications of what happened on Tuesday and how white Americans as a people must respond if there is to be any hope for our continued existence on Earth. Now, I'm not going to say I told you so, because I wish I hadn't. I really did hope against hope that I would be proven wrong. To my own astonishment, there seems to be just enough residual red, white, and blue remaining in my makeup so that the thought of that baby-shit-brown half-breed and his nappy-headed blue-gum hoe continuing to defile the home of men like Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, and Theodore Roosevelt saddens and sickens some part of me. But it seems that the moral cowardice, the greed, and the stupidity of the past 100 years have at long last caught up with us, and we no longer have the luxury of paddling in the waters of delusion. Long before we were due to become a numerical minority, normal people are now outnumbered electorally, and that is where the final decision has been made. Make no mistake, as of midnight on November the 6th, white people are now a minority in this country, whatever the population statistics might say. Our goal can never again be to conserve or preserve something that was lost long ago. From this day forward, our struggle must be that of a hated and persecuted minority fighting to preserve our very existence. That is the message of what happened on Election Day of 2012. We must hear that message, understand it, and act upon it, or we will all die. And before we die, we will suffer the torments of the damned as we slowly sink into the mud. There will be no escape, not for any of us. I say this because I know how American white people react when they are confronted with unpleasant facts and frightening truth. We run away. In the past, we fled to the lily-white suburbs to get away from the uncomfortable truth about race and who rules America. But with gas at $4 a gallon, that option is no longer open to most of us. Some of us flee as far into the deep woods and mountain hollows as we can go, and live in a little cabin or a trailer, desperately trying to unplug ourselves from the horrible world around us, in the pathetic belief that we can hide ourselves and our families from Obama. Ask Randy Weaver or the murdered children of Waco how that worked out for them. Our lords and masters have made it clear. Nobody gets to stop the merry-go-round and get off. It's not allowed. Some of us run away onto the internet and seek weak and sterile comfort in endless babble within our own tiny, incestuous little blogosphere. The fact that this podcast, with around 5,000 listeners per week, is one of the biggest things on the white internet speaks volumes about reality. No wonder we're running from it. Most of us simply pop the top on another cold brew, sink down into the soft cushions of the sofa, and change the channel in disgust, trying to see if we can find a football game. With American white males, crying in our beer isn't necessarily a figure of speech. But we can't run and hide now, because I won't let you. For once, and at long last, we must look catastrophe in the eye and cease to pretend that we do not know how this has happened, who is responsible, and what we have to do about it if we are to recover whatever shreds remain of our manhood. Now, we know the truth about our enemies and about ourselves, and the first step towards acting on that truth is that we must first speak it out loud. Now, I will go first, but you must follow, because if not, then life simply isn't going to be worth living anymore. And with things the way they are in this country right now, that's going to come about pretty quickly. Now, don't misunderstand me. A Mitt Romney presidency would have been almost as disastrous as 4 more years of Obongo will be. But there was at least some faint chance that, at least economically, a Republican victory on November the 6th might have given us a few more years of breathing space to get our act together. We no longer have that luxury. The election itself reeked of fraud and coercion, of course, as I warned, and as is to be expected from the Democratic Party. Intimidation of white voters in Pennsylvania, including the forcible ejection of Republican poll watchers in Philadelphia, and tampered voting machines in Ohio that recorded Romney votes for Obama instead, carried two crucial states and their electoral votes that swung the election to the Democrats. What can I tell you? It's our national dichotomy. Republicans steal money, Democrats steal votes. There will be some bitching and moaning by a few Republicans and talk show hosts, but nothing will be done about the theft of a national general election. Nothing ever is. That's why we have talk radio and Drudge Report, so that people can let off steam without ever threatening anyone's actual wealth and power. So we will have 4 more years of Obama, or maybe more. It's entirely possible that Tuesday may well turn out to be the last traditional presidential election in American history, because we are witnessing the final death of normalcy in this country, and the situation as it will exist 4 years from now may well be something unimaginable to us today. So, let's see if we can predict what's coming down the pike. I honestly don't know where to begin. The horrific possibilities are so all over the map here. But I'll start with illegal immigration. That entire concept will disappear over the next 4 years. Obama has already begun this by instituting the DREAM Act through executive decree after Congress rejected it twice. Now, the fact that he was allowed to get away with this by the spineless Republicans in Congress has let the Democrats know that their house nigger is immune from impeachment over anything he does, which is the only legal remedy that the Constitution provides when a president loses his mind or transmutes into a dictator. Within the next 4 years, either through craven political surrender on the part of the Republicans or else simply through presidential executive order without reference to Congress, millions of illegal aliens will be amnestied and given a so-called path to citizenship. This means that by 2016 they'll have the vote, and they will also serve as anchor babies to bring in all their uncles and cousins and mama-sans and so forth and so on. Millions of these new Democrats will flood the country by 2016, and from now on any further elections will just be a formality. Among other things, November the 6th decided that from now on, the United States of America will be a genuine third world country, a one-party state in perpetuity with a majority black and brown population. George W. Bush is the last Republican and possibly the last heterosexual white male who will ever see the inside of the Oval Office. The damage that this wave of third world immigration will do to what remains of white America in the form of bloody crime and murder alone is something that's best left to the imagination. We're beginning a nightmare from which we will never wake up. You may recall that before the election, a number of bankers, financial analysts, economists, and treasury officials were predicting that if Obama were reelected and he and Ben Bernanke of the Federal Reserve continue to proceed in the manner of the last 4 years, the American economy will implode and collapse within 2 to 2.5 years. I don't mean our own right-wing fringe people who specialize in doomsaying newsletters or peddling gold and silver or other scams to get at old people's savings. These are real people with real financial knowledge and authority who are not using the words recession or even depression. The word they are using is collapse. I think they're right. Now, the reason they're right is that the United States of America is now out of money, and yet the regime continues to spend more than it has coming in, as do some of its subunits, such as blue states like California and cities like Detroit. I have never understood how on God's green earth the Democrats believe that they can get away with this forever. I suspect it's because they've gotten away with it for almost a century now, with a few intermissions of conservative fiscal sanity, kind of like stretches and rehab to whip the patient's battered body into shape so he can go back on the streets and keep on abusing drugs and alcohol. They've gotten away with it for 100 years through borrowing, and more borrowing, and borrowing again to pay back the borrowed money. Kind of like living off an endless credit card, until even with the most creative of accounting tricks, the bill has to come due. It will come due sometime within the next 4 years. The regime's response will be twofold. The first thing the Democrats will try to do will be to seize by force the last remaining major reserve of privately held wealth in this country, the life's savings and personal property of middle-aged to elderly white Americans, in order that they might redistribute that wealth to people with black and brown skins. They will also attempt to levy crushing taxes on small business, since those are actually collectible. Large multinational corporations will simply hide their assets offshore, outsource their remaining plant and jobs to India and China, and use lawyers to avoid paying almost any taxes at all. It has always been axiomatic. The rich will not pay taxes, and the poor cannot. So the bulk of all taxes are always paid by the middle class. which in this country means white people. White small business people can't afford to buy attorneys and accountants and tax shelters or bribe regulators and politicians, and so accordingly, white small business people will disappear from the American economic landscape over the next few years. Like the passenger pigeon and the Carolina parakeet, Obama and the Democrats will hunt them to extinction. Killing the goose that lays the golden egg will provide only a temporary slaking of the regime's insatiable lust for cash. And when the goose's bones have been picked clean and the juggle of constant borrowing can no longer be maintained, the Jew Ben Bernanke at the Federal Reserve will simply begin to print money. They call it quantitative easing now. Bernanke has done it 3 times that we know about during the first Obama presidency, which is one reason why you can't buy an edible piece of beef in a grocery store for less than $5.99 a pound, and why everything costs so much more now than it did 4 years ago. The iron law of inflation is that the more money in circulation, the higher the prices. The flood of worthless money from the Federal Reserve will probably be the trigger for that complete economic collapse that the money technocrats were worried about before the election. Then there is Obamacare, which is scheduled to kick in 2 months from now in January 2013. That's when the withholding taxes for Obamacare will hit your paycheck along with the expiration of the Bush tax cuts. It'll all come crashing down on you in what even the liberal media are calling Taxmageddon. In the middle of January and at the end of the month when the first payslips arrive, which have been plundered by the new withholding taxes, millions of people are going to be screaming and sobbing in horror and begging God to take them back to November the 6th so that they can vote for Mitt Romney. I'm not going to say too much about how Obamacare will actually be implemented because I don't know. Nobody knows. We're talking about a law that's 2,500 pages long and which nobody read before it was passed. I do know that judging by the pricing I've seen so far, I will not be able to afford it. All you FBI guys and U.S. attorneys out there listening to this podcast, straining to hear me say something you can use to whip up some kind of prosecution, I am dead serious when I tell you that if you can just hang on for about 18 months or so, or whenever the mandatory clause kicks in, you'll have me, because I will be breaking the law by not buying Obamacare. Now, this isn't even a political statement. I can't. I just don't have that kind of money. And thanks to that stupid nigger's policies, neither do tens of millions of other Americans. Obamacare is like prohibition. It's a law that will end up creating millions of lawbreakers. Now, the way the regime is planning on collecting the Obamacare money is through the IRS and your 1040 form. Unless you are one of the top tier of white people who still has some reserve of private wealth stashed somewhere and who can pay for the premiums out of pocket, the fact is that you've probably seen your last income tax refund. I suspect that within a few years, any refunds at all will be things of the past. From now on, one of the overriding imperatives of American life will be to get hold of just a few dollars that the Internal Revenue Service doesn't know about and so can't steal from you and your family and give to a nigger or a Mexican. I could go on and on describing what is probably going to happen over the next 4 years, but at the risk of crying wolf yet again, we still have the situation in the Middle East with Israel chomping at the bit to attack Persia, close the Straits of Hormuz, and cut off 1/3 of the world's imported energy. Now, I'm not sure what kind of deal was cut with Benjamin Netanyahu in October. Maybe Benny already has Obama's okay for the attack on Persia in his pocket. I'm not sure how much of this Obama as secret Muslim crap is true. I do understand that there has been at least some degree of falling out between Israel and the hippy-dippy 60s retreads who head the Democratic Party now. And I know that Netanyahu would far rather be dealing with the Christian Zionist neoconservatives of Mitt Romney as well. But never underestimate the hold that Israel still has over every American institution of government, media, and finance. Israel will have to move soon or any hope of stopping those Iranian nuclear reactors from firing up will be gone. So we've got that little joker in our pack to deal with on top of everything else. I could go on and on with this kind of prediction and analysis as to what'll happen now that America is officially no longer a republic or even a democracy, but we become a third world dictatorship. But due to the seriousness of the subject, I want this podcast to be a bit shorter and punchier than most, so it's time now to speak of what we have to do about all this, if we're not going to disappear from the face of the earth. And make no mistake, that's what we're looking at. This is Sean Davey. Okay, I was going to sit down and write a really brilliant script for the second part of the podcast and make this one of my immortal works to be replayed over and over again and remembered for all time. But as per usual, something came up that only I could deal with, and so I'm way behind on Wednesday night, and if I stop to write a script, what with all the editing and review and whatnot, this won't get up online until tomorrow, and I need to strike while the iron is hot, so I'm going to go ahead and see if I can ad lib it. Now, I said that we now have to talk about what we got to do in order to survive as a people, now that we're officially a minority in our own land. But I didn't plan on giving you guys just the usual get your shit packed into that U-Haul and get your pale asses up here speech. Now, if you're a regular listener to this program, you've heard that about once a month, and if you're not, just keep on listening, you'll hear it soon enough. I think everyone who follows Radio Free Northwest has either read one or more of the Northwest Independence novels, or you've heard me on the Mike Harris Show, or read about them online, and you have at least some idea as to what's in the novels. If not, guys, you really need to get hold of these books and read them, because it's almost impossible for you to understand the code that I have to use for public speaking, what Lenin called Aesopian language, unless you have read the novels first. Now, in any case, I'm not going to give you a review of their contents. You need to read them for yourselves. Nor am I going to sit here and rant and rave at you and call you cowards and lazy dumbasses and so forth and so on. Now, I know most of you have heard that one a lot as well. Of course, in some cases, that's true. People don't come here because of a combination of cowardice and laziness, and also a deep sense of pessimism and defeatism. If I had to define our one main perceptual problem, I'd have to say that it's the fact that the overwhelming majority of white people are utterly convinced in their very bones that it can't be done. Now, of course, I've lived in other countries, other times, and I know for a fact that it can be done because I've lived it. I've seen it, but most of you American comrades of ours don't. I get that. A lot of Americans are utterly convinced, as an article of faith, that resistance of any kind is genuinely futile, and the best thing we can do for everybody is go off in a corner somewhere and die quietly to make way for the new rulers of the earth. Those who look like walking turds. Now, you guys have heard that one, too. The fact is that most of you people have heard pretty much everything I have to say already. Now, all of you know that I'm speaking the truth. Yes, you do. It is amazing how infrequently I hear from someone intelligent and sincere who genuinely disagrees as a matter of principle or tactics with the Northwest or the Butler Plan or the Homeland Concept or whatever. When I do hear from somebody like that, I almost always find that they haven't actually read the novels, and it's just a matter of sending them The Brigade or A Mighty Fortress, and after that they get it. All right, I swore I wasn't just going to rehash all the things I've been ranting about for the past 3 years on here. This is two nights after white people officially became a minority in America. A very important day in all our lives. A day that will determine the course of human events for a long time. I need to make this very good, very profound. How can I persuade you people to fight against evil when the evil is stronger and will hurt you or your loved ones if they resist? You might call this the conundrum of tyranny. This is a conundrum that has faced our race time and again down through the centuries in a lot of different societies and nations and in many different forms. Now, let me make this clear. I'm not just talking about armed resistance of the Robin Hood in the greenwood with his longbow and the shooting and the headlopping kind, although that's what actually brings about change, because it makes these people stop. I'm not talking about violence necessarily. I'm talking about resistance, if you get the difference. The act of refusing to do what you're told, think what you're told, and write and say what you're told. And using that refusal as a political tool and a weapon, which is what I do. I can understand why no one wants to run up to an armed policeman and kick him in the balls. That kind of thing is just stupid, like most of the proactive stuff we pull. But most people never do anything, violent or political or symbolic. They never raise their hand in any way against evil that oppresses their bodies and eats away their souls. They live each day from morning until night hoping to remain unnoticed, hoping to stay out of the system, and hoping that no one with power will ever take it into their heads to hurt them or fuck with them in some way. How can you live like that? How can you not do something to resist, even if it's just scrawling slogans on a wall or something like that? I have never understood that. In every tyrannical society or dictatorship, the overwhelming majority of the people who live under the iron heel, whoever's iron heel it is, never resist it at all, for the same reason that you won't. It's because you are afraid. Afraid that if you resist, or argue, or disobey, or if you even get caught telling a politically incorrect joke or using a forbidden word, then the muscle men will come and hurt you, destroy your life and destroy your family with their clubs and their guns and their laws. And you're right, they might do. They will, unless someone makes them stop. They came for Edgar Steele, and now if I understand correctly, it looks like they've come for Cindy, which I consider to be an act of flat-out institutional terrorism designed to frighten white people into being quiet. It will probably work. They came for Johnny Logan Spencer. They came for Matt Hale. They came for Bill White. The list goes on, and I'm sure most of us could add some more names to that list. As usual with tyrants, they seem to hold all the cards. They've got the law, the courts, the prisons. They've got many more guns than we have, even in the unlikely event we could ever be persuaded to take ours out of the closet. They've got the media. Every night, television is full of shows that actually make heroes out of these people and the mercenary scum who keep them in power. They've got all the money in the world, although that's worth less and less every day. Yes, resisting them is dangerous. Yes, you could be hurt, and I don't just mean bodily. Yes, you could lose everything you have. Yes, they might decide to just plain kill you, which they can do now under the National Defense Authorization Act of 2011, so long as Obama himself signs off on it. Or if they just feel like killing you without such formality, they'll do it like they've murdered people for years. Pull you over at night for a routine traffic stop, shoot you down, and throw down a cheap 25 caliber junk gun at your feet, and claim that you pulled it out on them, or something even more ridiculous. Don't believe it can happen? Do you remember my telling you the story of Jeff Hughes a few weeks ago about how some female cop pumped 10 bullets in his body because he was supposed to be waving a flare gun in the air, except nobody ever found the flare gun? I'm not making this stuff up, you know. We are not just living under a run-of-the-mill third-world dictatorship now. Third world or not, the United States of America is the most powerful and pervasive police state the world has ever seen. All the more so because it's a bureaucratic rather than an autocratic tyranny. Remember what Bertolt Brecht once said about the banality of evil? The United States of America personifies the banality of evil. Warrantless wiretapping, spy cameras on every corner now, drones and satellites watching from the sky, the legal right to torture people, to take people out of the country, secretly to foreign prisons for more torture. The legal right to commit murder on the say-so of quote-unquote competent federal authority, which could be some little girl U.S. attorney just out of law school young enough to be my granddaughter. You guys would have to be nuts to resist an evil of that magnitude. I understand that. But that's exactly what I'm asking you to do. Why? Why on earth should you? I've told you before. Because it is right. Because it's who you are. Because an Aryan man never bends the knee before anyone except God, and sometimes not even him. Historically, our people don't put up with shit like Barack Hussein Obama. Or we didn't until recently. The late Pastor Robert Miles was once asked by some reporter bimbo to define what a racist was, and Bob replied, "A racist is someone who knows who he is." White people are now a minority in America, the land of our birth. We are outvoted, we are outgunned, we are destitute compared to the infinite resources of the tyrant, we are weak and tired and confused. We need to remember who we are. You need to remember who you are. The Roman Empire came to an end in the year 486 AD when the last emperor, a 14-15-year-old kid named Romulus Augustulus, resigned his throne as emperor of the West in favor of some barbarian Gothic king. That's when history records that Rome actually fell, but the thing is, of course, in 486 AD, nobody knew that Rome was falling at the time. To them, it was just kind of another day of politics as usual. The United States of America came to an end on November the 6th, 2012, when we, the people who founded and created it, finally found ourselves outnumbered by the beasts of the field. The United States is over now. It's just that we don't quite realize it yet. There is no longer any hope for you or your family where you are now. Events are going to catch up to you. If you wait too long, you will be too old and poor and sick and weak to make the move. And one day, your shit-skinned neighbors will come into your home and beat you to death before taking whatever few items of value you may still have in the house after a lifetime in Obama's America, which won't be much. After the election, I got the expected raft of emails from white people crying and whining and wringing their hands about the nigger getting reelected, even if it was through dishonesty and fraud. Stop it. I don't want to hear it anymore. We don't have time for sobbing and wringing our hands anymore. I have told you what to do. You need to come here to the Pacific Northwest with your family, your assets, your skills, and your determination to make this idea work and create a homeland for all of our people. Right here. It is legal. It is safe. It is beneficial to you and your family. It can be done. It is the right thing to do. Do it. Now.
westward from the Davis Strait, 'twas there 'twas said to lie, the sea route to the Orient, for which so many died, seeking gold and glory, leaving weather broken bones, and a long forgotten lonely care of stones. Ah, for just one time I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea, tracing one warm line through a land so wide and savage, and make a Northwest Passage to the sea. 3 centuries thereafter, I take passage overland in the footsteps of brave Kelso, where his sea of flowers began. Watching cities rise before me, then behind me sink again, this tardiest explorer driving hard across the plain. Ah, for just one time I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea, tracing one more line through a land so wide and savage, and make a Northwest Passage to the sea. And through the night, behind the wheel, the mileage clicking west, I think upon Mackenzie, David Thompson, and the rest, who cracked the mountain ramparts and did show a path for me to race the roaring Fraser. For just one time I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea, tracing one more line through a land so wide and savage, and make a Northwest Passage. So different from the first men through this way. Like them, I left a settled life, I threw it all away to seek a Northwest Passage at the call of many men, to find their but the road back